it. I told him on credit, Daddy just smiled. I'll never forget it. Daddy never was the Cadillac kind. He said some things just glitter and shine.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this. What's left of this Friday morning? Something I've been neglecting to do it when I'm supposed to, but coming up on Monday's show, real quick, Jennifer Fiddler, my state rep, will be with us. And Dell Jackson, and one guest to be named later, but another oversight. It looks like 3 days in a row. I forgot to do the programming note. So anyway, that's for your consumption there. Joining us now, we do this every Friday about this time. He is our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing great. It's a great day in Baldwin County.
Yeah, so ribbon cutting down at the new facility there. Tell us a little bit about it.
Man, Baldwin Preparatory Academy. So finally cut the ribbon on that. It has been, active since the beginning of the year with kids enrolled in that that school, but just an amazing combination of private industry working with education folks to cut through the red tape and the educrat bureaucracy to do this novel thing called preparing kids, students to actually enter the workforce and get a job and get one right out of school. And so just an impressive concept. Again, education folks with the Baldwin County School System really thinking outside the box in conjunction with industry folks and the leadership at the Baldwin County Economic Development Alliance under Lee Lawson, just coming up with a solution. And then us showing it to folks like Will Ainsworth and Arthur Orr and others, and part of the workforce package was a new diploma that will allow these folks to graduate from high school with actual skills to go straight to work. It's just very, very impressive.
Well, that's good to hear. And, it's just, I guess from Baldwin County and a very unique economy, but your education system is able to kind of set the tone for the rest of the state, I think.
Well, that's exactly right. And it's one of the things I talked with Senator Orr, of course, who's the education budget chairman, and Senator Chastain, who's the ed policy chairman in the Senate. And I told him, again, Governor Ainsworth, who's been very, very, very supportive of this. But I've told them time and time again, look, we're not asking for you to fund this, which is not something they're used to hearing, right? This is just take this concept and go repeat it around the state, because it will be the thing that keeps Alabama growing. The economic development questions we get are not about our great business environment. They're about our workforce. And if we can point to facilities like this that are churning kids out, ready to work, the sky is the limit from an economic development standpoint. And then from a private standpoint, these kids are ready to start their own businesses. A lot of them are coming out with a two-year college degree, maybe in business administration or, something along those lines, and an HVAC certificate. And so they're ready to start their own small businesses. They'll have no debt and college debt, and they'll just be ready to go. It's really setting our kids up for success.
Let's get into this. Well, there's a few things we got to get on, and I'll start out ADVA, the back and forth between that board, the governor. I don't know if you were able to hear Pete Rehm or if you even heard Todd Stacey on this show talking about it. Todd thinks that you guys in the legislature are just going to overhaul this entire thing. And I don't know, maybe that's wishful thinking or maybe it isn't. It seems like a heavy lift at minimum to just rehaul this agency. What do you think is going to happen there?
Your assessment's probably correct. I mean, we are going to look at boards in general, but this is not necessarily an occupational board, far from it. This is different. I would not surprise me to see the governor try to push some legislation that gave those appointments to that board directly to her without recommendations from different veterans groups. That will have huge, pushback from those veterans groups in particular districts, which would make it, as you point out, a very heavy lift. But the whole thing just surprises me. It really does. For the governor to get this personally involved in something like this is odd, I think. I will tell you, what she is, call it hard-headed or call it strong or, persistent or whatever you want to call it. But once she get something in her mind, she usually follows through no matter what the battlefield looks like afterwards.
I mean, to me, this, we'll just talk about the politics. Now, she's a little lame duck governor. There's no, like, real downside. She has a sweat. It's not like she's going to lose her next election or something. But the brand, ADVA, whatever's going on within the bureaucracy or whatever, I mean, the people are known entities throughout the state, I think, that serve in that capacity. However, it just, the governor versus veterans doesn't seem like a very wise storyline to even dabble in.
Well, it's odd and it's nuanced to have to get in and figure out what really went on here. Was there really anything, you know, any wrongdoing going on? And it's something you have to spend a lot of time into even research to form an opinion, and just kind of wonder, is there not something better to be, you know, focused on here? And I think all of this stems around an ethics complaint, and you know, it's just a little, it's unseemly, and you just wonder why with all the other things, recreating Baldwin Preparatory Academy statewide, you know, and really moving the needle, why we're spending, you know, the governor's precious time on something like this.
How much of it is like mental health versus VA? I mean, that's what it looks like to me, the state agencies, that is. And I don't know what, you know, the motivations are. You've heard them, I'm sure, Senator, about contractors and all of that and the fight over money. But it looks like a turf war to me that we see throughout government on a regular basis.
It is, and it's always war. I mean, and I guess that's what makes this so unremarkable to me is, you know, it's not anything new. One agency wanting money over another agency, this is not remarkable, and I don't think it rises to the level of, because it is the day in, day out appropriations fight. And this happens between every agency every day. And I just don't I'm not following why this has risen to, gotten so personal that it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Let's move on from that. You break it up a little, by the way, but the other thing that's come up, and this, you and I are talking about it off air, and I don't know, I mean, I kind of have an idea where you are on it, but the legal ads and newspapers and Al Dott telling us that, you know, a mistake, like what was seemingly a harmless mistake, but it wasn't harmless in the end, just an omission of an ad. And based on the way our state bid laws are and legal notices and requirements, cost the state, at least according to Al Dott, $1.76 million. But you can see where it would change bids, and especially now where you got to move on these projects, or you're going to get caught in that supply chain, or even labor crunch. But, what do you think of this? Is this a turning point in this whole discussion about the way we do our legal advertising in this state?
Well, I think it is. And look, to get the legislature to move on something, you oftentimes have to have more than just a good government argument, right? It has to be a problem. You have to show that it's a problem. And oftentimes you have to show that you're either losing money on it or stand to gain some significant efficiency. And so I think what's happened here is not anything new. It's just shining a light on the fact that these arcane methods of advertising for legal notices and bid lettings are fraught with problems as well, and that we need to update the way we do those things. The small independents, the weeklies that are hanging on, still printing things, good for them. They provide a valuable service, but it is very much the way we're doing things now and have been since the 60s is very much a subsidy for these small weekly papers. I mean, just call it what it is. It's not an efficient way to distribute information. It's not an efficient way to meet the legal notice requirements for public works contracts. And the only reason it stays is because it supports these small little local papers. It subsidizes these small local papers. And costs taxpayers millions of dollars a year, millions. And then when there's a mistake, costs even more millions. And so it's past time to look at this again. And I think these examples just provide the catalyst, if you will, to demonstrate what can happen to taxpayers when these things go wrong.
Well, what would the alternative be? And I can only imagine this. And this was when Andrew Sorrell first tried to do this, and he got shredded. But it was like, well, not everybody has access to the internet. We can't make it an internet-based entity. Okay, fair enough. But I'm going to sit here. I bet you a lot of places in the state, Senator, don't have access to a print newspaper. I mean, exactly. I think there's more readily available internet than there are print newspapers, to be honest.
Well, look, everybody's got access to the internet. It may not be fast, and it may be on your phone. But there's not anybody walking around that doesn't, if they want it, have access to some internet. And certainly not somebody who's reading legal notices or bid documents, for an Aldot project. That argument just doesn't hold water in my mind anymore. At the end of the day, you probably are looking at some statewide database that effectively provides the public notice, right? But we don't end up with a snafu like we had in Gordo, but effectively provides the notices that need to be out there, and does so at a fraction of the cost. Because what you see too often is the small independents out there realizing they're the only game in town, and they're the only place this notice can be run, and so they jack up their costs to basically hold the government hostage in providing these, paying for these notices that are required by statute. It's just a silly way to continue to do things. We need to evolve with the times, and we need to make sure we end up in a spot where we're not beholding on some of these small independents getting it right, and then when they screw up, getting the taxpayer left holding the bill at the end and costing millions.
Yeah, and the other part of this, Senator, and these people at the Alabama Press Association, I mean, you talk about turf wars and just really the hill to die on. That's what this is going to be. If you guys decide you want to change this, I mean, I don't know how much stroke they have, though, anymore. I what are you going to write, a mean op-ed in the Monroe County Journal? And that's going to, really turn the tide against, I don't know, Greg Allbritton or whoever, Thomas Action Jackson or whoever is representing that up there. I mean, I just don't know that they are quite as where they once were. I guess there's some publications, one that I work for, that does have some stroke, but I think it as a whole in the state, that fear that they were going to come after you if you touch this money, it may just kind of be more of a, dare I say, a paper tiger.
Sorry, that was funny. The Lanyap and the Gulf Coast News and all of those folks are great publications, and they provide a great service, and I think that I hope they continue to be successful. There's just a declining readership in the delivery format that they use, right? It's just how things change. And I think that instead of making the argument, don't take our government subsidy away from us, figure out how to be a better part of the solution and change with the times and understand that the way we deliver, information has changed. Both of those publications that we've talked about have online presence, and all of that is them realizing that not everybody reads off of a newsprint anymore. They read on the internet, they read on their phones, they read on social media. You know, in business, you evolve or you die. It's not complicated, but to make the argument that we need to maintain a very expensive public subsidy for these folks to continue to do things the way they've been doing, and again, ineffectively sometimes, and a great cost to the taxpayer, is a bad argument to make, and not one that I think will be successful long term.
What do you think the mood is at the State House for something like this. It's hard to tell. Now, your colleague Sam Gavan seems to be kind of in line with you. I don't know. Like I guess this guy now may have been the sponsor of the bill, and you know, with Andrew Sorrell, that has its own issue, but that you get something done, you get something in the hopper like this. What do you think the reception will be?
Well, look, you know, there are members that have great relationships with their small independents, and they want to protect those folks. And I don't have anything against any of those entities. But I do think that when you're able to point, as we are here, to specific instances where ineffectiveness on the paper's behalf has led to multi-million dollar errors that have cost taxpayers millions of dollars, I think that the attitudes change a little bit and really shine a light not only on the lack of efficiency, but the cost when there's a screw up. And so I think you put the two of those together and you turn members a little bit better than just making an efficiency argument alone.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just, like I said, there's a lot of different people in the chamber now. How many people really rely? It's a good mix, right? There are districts where the newspaper and Billy Beasley's district or something, I mean, it's still kind of that's the go-to source. But like in Mobile or in Birmingham, especially, like, are you going to the Hoover Sun anymore? I don't think so.
Well, I mean, you take a great publication like the Trustful Tribune, right? And our friend Scott Butcher. I mean, they do a fantastic job, and that is all well and good. But again, I think we need to encourage them to change with the times.
Our buddy Scott Butcher he's not eligible to run those legal ads, so he doesn't even get the government subsidy.
Well, see there, good, even better for him.
So he's your template out there if you're listening. Senator, we got to leave it there. I do appreciate your time. Enjoy this weather this weekend, and we'll talk again next week.
Thanks again, Jeff. Have a great weekend.
You too. State Senator Chris Elliott. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.